From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. 30,383, that's the magic number today from the Obama administration. It is a count, albeit a partial count, of jobs created or saved by the multi-billion dollar stimulus package. And it's the first formal data the government has released about jobs associated with the stimulus. In a moment, we'll hear from three states and from people who work some of those jobs. But first, NPR's Brian Naylor has the story from Washington.
The job numbers reflect people who were hired by private contractors to do jobs for federal agencies, jobs like putting a new roof on a federal building or constructing a new fence at a military base. There are $16 billion worth of such contracts in the $787 billion stimulus, a tiny fraction, says Jared Bernstein. He's the chief economist for Vice President Biden, who oversees the stimulus.
I think the best way to think about this data is if you think of the Recovery Act as a big picture, you're looking at one corner of that picture that's being painted by these data.
But Bernstein says that little corner of the big picture looks to him to be pretty significant. In fact, he says this preliminary count exceeds the administration's projections, and it includes only direct jobs created by the contracts.
Remember, somebody takes one of these jobs, one of these private workers on a contract, they're going to take their paycheck, they're going to go out and spend some of that money on groceries, on furnishings, whatever. That has multiplier effects. That creates more jobs.
Bernstein says the numbers are also significant because it's the first time the government has attempted to track jobs created by a government program with such granularity in real time. The numbers were published on the website recovery.gov. A much bigger jobs number is expected at the end of the month when state and local governments report how they've spent stimulus dollars. The more complete picture will show things like construction workers hired to repair roads and teachers retained by local school districts. In New Orleans today, President Obama said the stimulus program is beginning to show results.
Now, the Recovery Act we passed earlier this year has helped stop the bleeding. Everybody agrees on that. It's put tax cuts in the pockets of working families and small businesses. It extended unemployment insurance and health insurance to people who'd been laid off. It saved or created hundreds of thousands of jobs in the private sector.
But critics of the program, including House Republican leader John Boehner, say the stimulus has done little to staunch the flow of jobs.
The stimulus bill is not working. The American people are asking, where are the jobs?
Economist Douglas Holtz Aiken, who was John McCain's economic advisor in last year's presidential campaign, is also skeptical of the effect of the stimulus. The president has pledged the stimulus will create or save 3.5 million jobs. Holtz Aiken says today's release of job numbers is important politically for the administration.
It matters enormously, which is why we're seeing this approach of bringing out numbers as quickly as possible and as often as possible to show tangible results for the bill.
If you think of the stimulus program as election night, the jobs numbers released today are very early returns from a few scattered precincts. It's too soon to judge who is ahead yet, though, like on election night, there are many who think they do know the final results. Brian Naylor, NPR News, Washington.
Whether it's contemporary or modern or Victorian or whatever, if a wedding dress is free, then the likely response is, I'll take it, especially if the bride and the groom are a bit down on their luck. Well, take them they did today at a bridal shop in Plantation, Florida, where the owner has been sponsoring wedding gown giveaways for brides who've recently lost their jobs. Patricia South owns the Bride's Choice. She's already given away more than 100 gowns. Today and tomorrow, she's handing out still more. And Mrs. South joins us now from her showroom in Plantation. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Well, what a wonderful thing you're doing for brides on a budget. Why did you decide to do this?
Well, it's just an exciting time right now. People are really struggling, and girls are out of work, and they're, you know, having a hard time affording their weddings. So here I was with an inventory of beautiful, beautiful designer wedding gowns, and our space was becoming limited. And I thought to myself, what a shame. What can we do with these dresses that would benefit someone? And the thought came to me, if we could find girls in need and just give them away. We got such a wonderful response from different brides from all over the state of Florida. We even got responses from girls from other states, girls that actually wanted to fly here. One girl from California.
No, wait, she couldn't afford a gown, but she was going to fly to Florida to get a free dress?
Yes. It was so funny because our receptionist who answered the phone, she said to her, she goes, "Now, honey, I think you need to really think about this. Don't you think you could afford to buy a dress with the money it would cost?" And she says, "You know, I really never thought about it. I just got so excited that you were giving away a free dress." We've had girls from Tampa, Florida. We've had girls from down in the Keys. We gave away 133 dresses in 2 days last week on the 7th and the 8th of October, and it was just incredible.
It sounds like you're very busy, and in fact, I think I hear some noise there in the background. You're there in the showroom. Maybe you could describe for us what's going on right now.
Well, we have girls lined up, number one, outside, and what we're doing is we give each one of the girls a sheet to fill out to validate that they really are unemployed and they really are engaged to be married. After they fill that out, we give them a number, and they stand in line, and we call them in six at a time. As the girls come in, they have 15 minutes to pick out a dress. And last week, I think we cried all week long just listening to the stories of the girls that came in and how appreciative they were.
Is there one bride that really stands out whose vision you still have in your mind?
There's so many of them. Last week we had a bride. She was here at 9 o'clock in the morning, and she was in the car with her mother and her little daughter, about 3 years old, who was an invalid. She did not want to leave. We told her, you know, we're not doing this till 4 o'clock. And it was 93 degrees out last week in the shade. She says, no, I don't want to leave. I want to stay. So finally, I just couldn't stand it. So I said, listen, you come in and pick out your dress. She came in. She picked out her dress in 10 minutes, and she was out the door. And, crying. We were all crying. It was just an amazing thing.
And Miss South, you're in your showroom, and I just have this vision of you surrounded by people who are wearing all kinds of white lace and tulle and satin. I think that's a wonderful image to go out on. So thank you so much for speaking to us.
Thank you.
Patricia South owns the Bride's Choice Bridal Shop in Plantation, Florida.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel. Today on a trip to New Orleans, President Obama spoke about the state of the economy. Mr. Obama said even though inflation is in check, people on fixed incomes are still facing hardship. And he told the New Orleans audience that that's one reason he's backing a plan to send $250 checks next year to more than 50 million Americans. The checks would go to Social Security recipients, veterans, and the disabled. Mr. Obama has not said where he'd get the $13 billion to pay for that program. NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley joins us now. And Scott, the White House announced this idea just as word was coming out that Social Security recipients would not be getting a cost of living increase next year. What's going on here?
Well, Robert, it's pretty simple. Seniors and others who collect Social Security are not getting a cost of living increase because the cost of living has not increased. In fact, according to the Labor Department's calculations, it went down about 2% in the last year. One could argue, therefore, seniors, even if their checks stay the same, will have more buying power than they have in the past. But that's not good enough for the White House, and so they want to send a one-time check to all the people who get Social Security and veterans benefits of $250 sometime next year. They point out that other parts of the stimulus package extend into next year. And so in a way, this is just putting seniors on the same plane as workers.
Well, is the White House calling this the much-discussed second stimulus?
No, they are pointedly not referring to this as a second stimulus package. The administration has said it supports extending some pieces of the stimulus measure that are due to expire, including unemployment benefits, government subsidies for health insurance, and now they want to provide, again, a second $250 check to Social Security recipients. But they certainly do hope that retirees will spend that money and use it to stimulate the economy. In a statement yesterday, President Obama said this could be a benefit not only to the recipients but to their communities and all the people who get that money.
It's kind of the language of stimulus, but
that's
not
right.
Using the word stimulus.
The multiplier effect. Mm-hmm. But they don't want to call it a second stimulus because that might suggest that the first stimulus is somehow not doing its job.
Which is what some Republicans are saying in Congress.
It's exactly what Republicans are saying, yes.
Now, is the White House saying anything about how it would pay for this round of $250 checks?
No, the only thing that the president said yesterday in endorsing this idea is that the money should not come at the expense of the Social Security Trust Fund. But other than that, he says he's basically willing to work with Congress on a way to pay for this. And in fact, it's possible that the checks won't be paid for at all, that the government would simply borrow more money to send these checks out, $13 billion, as you say. Now, the administration has generally taken the position that new programs ought to be paid for, either with additional revenues or compensating spending cuts elsewhere in the budget. But they say when it comes to an economic stimulus measure, that's not really what you want to do. It doesn't
not
make
that
sense.
This is a stimulus.
That's right. But you don't want to be pumping money into the economy with one hand and taking it out with the other. So they're willing to let this not be paid for. If that's the way it goes, you know, maybe the seniors should give that money to their grandkids because they'll be the ones who have to pay it back.
What do you think is the political advantage here for the president to propose this kind of payoff to seniors?
Well, no one, of course, would suggest that the affection of seniors can be bought for a measly $250, but it can't hurt, and this is the group where President Obama has the most trouble. There was a Gallup poll that came out this week showing the president's overall approval rating at about 54%. That's actually up a little bit, but his approval rating among those 65 and over, just 46%, and that's been very consistent. Seniors are the group that are least likely to approve the president's performance. It's the one demographic group he lost in last year's election. And significantly for the White House, it's the one demographic group that can pretty much be counted on to vote in next year's election.
That's right. That's the group that turns out. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
That's NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley.
The late Senator Edward Kennedy wanted to promote volunteer service, and he sponsored a law called the Serve America Act, which took effect in the first of the month. The law expands programs like the Silicon Valley Encore Initiative, which is a Bay Area pilot project that pairs retired corporate big leaguers with nonprofits that could use their expertise. Rachel Miro of member station KQED in San Francisco has more.
After 20 successful years at Hewlett-Packard, Leslie Louie left in her mid-40s. She wanted to do some good in the world. The question was, what exactly?
I entered the wild world of Craigslist, and I would do a lot of volunteer work. I literally stuffed envelopes.
This is a former VP of sales and marketing talking for a $15 billion business unit at HP. Louie can stuff envelopes, but she can also offer something a lot of envelope stuffers can't.
In between being a volunteer and sitting on the board, which is a little bit more removed, is a huge field of contribution.
Then Louie got a call from Hewlett-Packard. The tech giant was launching a pilot program with Civic Ventures, a San Francisco nonprofit focused on getting baby boomers nearing retirement to launch into encore careers, careers with a social purpose. Yvonne Hunt is HP's VP of Social Investment.
Typically the answer is, well, I'd like to go into the nonprofit sector, but I don't know how to do it.
Hunt says a lot of nonprofits could use the kind of expertise cultivated in private industry.
Human resources, IT, marketing.
The key is finding a way to connect corporate talent with nonprofit need, which is the idea behind the Encore Fellowships HP set up with Civic Ventures.
This is just a nice, innovative model that allows those two worlds to merge.
Civic Ventures interviewed Louie to assess her skills and interests, then offered her a short list of likely nonprofits. Soon, she and another HP alum headed off to Partners in School Innovation, a 30-employee, $3.5 million organization focused on ground-level reform at urban public schools. CEO Derek Mitchell says the nonprofit's clients are school administrators and teachers.
We really help them refine lesson plans, look at the data after they applied that new lesson and asked the question of how could it have gone better.
The Encore Fellows did something similar for Partners. Over the course of 1 year, they developed a performance management database. Louie explains.
What data, what metrics, what evidence do we have of the actual impact they're having at different levels, at the school-wide level, at the grade level, and at the student level?
When it became clear the computers at Partners weren't up to the task, the Encore Fellows got HP to donate new equipment. Winning over the staff at the nonprofit was not so easy.
In my first presentation, I think I used the P word, profit, quite a few times, and it just fell so awfully. I hate to even remember that.
The awkwardness didn't last. Within 4 months, Louis was asked to serve as acting CEO during the leadership transition that brought in Derek Mitchell.
I don't think I would have gotten here with Craigslist. No, and I worked for some fabulous organizations as a volunteer. But no, I don't think you can just walk in and convince a CEO that you can lead the reorganization of the whole institution to be results-driven. They probably throw you out. Yet that was the trust that was placed in us because of this program.
It's worth noting the Encore Fellows don't work for free. Hewlett-Packard chips in $12.5 grand a year per fellow, as do participating nonprofits. Mitchell says putting a price tag and a deadline on the partnership ensures that the fellow and the nonprofit are focused on making the most of each other. Would he do this kind of thing again?
In a heartbeat.
The Serve America Act calls for 10 one-year Encore Fellowships in each state, with federal funding to help make it happen. For NPR News, I'm Rachel Miro in San Francisco.